Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
The man known to history as Emperor Caligula was born on the 31st of August 12 AD in the Italian town of Antium. His father, Germanicus, was born in 15 BC, the nephew of the future Emperor Tiberius. He rose to command the legions in Germany and hold the consulship twice. He was popular with the soldiers and people of Rome alike, and was brought into the line of succession at Augustus's request through his adoption by Tiberius. Following his campaigns in Germany, Germanicus was sent to the east by Tiberius, where he later died in 19 AD. His mother, Agrippina the Elder, was born in 14 BC and was the daughter of Julia and her second husband, Agrippa, and granddaughter of Augustus. She married Germanicus and they had 9 children. 2 died in infancy, and 1 in early childhood. In the end, only 4 of her children would outlive her. Like her husband, she was popular with the troops and with the people of Rome, which caused an ever-widening rift between her and Tiberius until she was eventually exiled in 29 AD and subsequently starved to death in 33 AD. Born as Gaius, Caligula spent his first years in Italy, spending some of the time within Augustus's household. When Germanicus left for Germany in 13 AD and was joined by Agrippina, Gaius was sent to join them by Augustus in 14 AD, beginning the journey in May. He quickly became favored by the legions and they nicknamed him Caligula, or Little Boots, owing to the soldiers' boots he wore as part of his miniature legionary uniform that his mother dressed him in. For his part, Caligula is said to have helped put down the mutiny among the legions in 14 AD. As when Agrippina was instructed to carry him to safety, to a nearby tribal settlement, it shamed the soldiers and peace was restored. The soldiers asked that both Agrippina and Caligula return to camp. Germanicus agreed that Caligula could return, but his mother would remain absent for the remainder of her current pregnancy. Caligula likely remained in the camp until Germanicus returned to Rome in 17 AD, where he celebrated a triumph and Caligula rode in his father's chariot during the procession, along with his 4 siblings. When Germanicus was appointed to command in the east, Agrippina and Caligula accompanied him. Their journey led them through the provinces where they were received warmly, their progress resembling a triumphal procession. Arriving in Assos in modern-day Turkey in 18 AD, Caligula, at only 5 years old, was said to have made his first speech. It is likely that when Germanicus visited Egypt in 19 AD, that Caligula accompanied his parents. When Germanicus died later that year on their return, Caligula was part of the procession, alongside his mother, that brought Germanicus's ashes back to Rome, arriving in Italy in 20 AD. Little of his education or other matters pertaining to Caligula's early years are known. It is likely that his education would have followed that of other children of the senatorial class, and while his brothers Nero Caesar and Drusus Caesar assumed their places within the succession at this point in time, it seems that Caligula didn't figure into Tiberius's plan. It was during these intervening years that Sejanus rose to power, favored by Tiberius. Relations between Agrippina and the emperor continued to sour, and following the death of Tiberius's son Drusus the Younger in 23 AD, his suspicion of her and those around her grew. In 27 AD, Tiberius had grown so suspicious of both Agrippina and her eldest son, Nero Caesar, no doubt fueled by the maneuvers of Sejanus, that they were both placed under house arrest, which led to Caligula and 2 of his sisters, Drusilla and Livilla, being moved to live in their great-grandmother Livia's household. His other sister, Agrippina the Younger, was betrothed by Tiberius to Domitius Ahenobarbus shortly after, in 28 AD, during one of Tiberius's returns to the mainland following his retirement from Rome. When Livia died in 29 AD, it was Caligula who delivered her funeral oration. Following Livia's death, Caligula and his sisters were taken into the household of his grandmother Antonia, the daughter of Mark Antony. Antonia was well connected throughout the eastern provinces, and it was while staying with her that Caligula began his lasting friendships with three princes of Thrace. It has been posited that it was whilst living with his grandmother that his incest with Drusilla began. However, modern interpretations of the evidence now suggest that while Caligula was close to his sister, the charge of incest amounts to little more than slander. How much contact Caligula had had with his mother and brothers in the previous 2 years is unknown. However, at the same time that they were brought into Antonia's household, Tiberius had both Caligula's mother and elder brother Nero Caesar exiled, and the following year saw the imprisonment of his brother Drusus Caesar. With the machinations of Sejanus in full swing by 30 AD, Antonia wrote to Tiberius. Although the contents of the letter are unknown, it seems to have had an effect on Tiberius, and towards the end of the year, he summoned Caligula to Capreae, the island he'd retired to some years earlier. Later than usual, at 18 years old, Caligula assumed the toga virilis, but without the honours that many of his predecessors had enjoyed on their assumption. It may also have been at this point that Tiberius began to turn against Sejanus, and the possibility that Caligula may have become the next target of his schemes against Germanicus's family is not out of the question. However, it has also been suggested that, in essence, Caligula, given his popularity as a son of Germanicus, was to serve as something of a hostage and ensure he couldn't be used against Tiberius, perhaps even providing a stabilizing effect for Tiberius's position, given the bad feeling directed towards those who were perceived as complicit in the downfall of Germanicus's family. Early in 31 AD, Caligula was granted a priesthood on the recommendation of Tiberius. It is not known for sure what Caligula felt in 33 AD when his brother Drusus Caesar was starved to death, followed shortly thereafter by the death of his mother. Whatever he felt, he kept to his own counsel and didn't allow himself to be drawn into making complaints or speaking out against Tiberius. In fact, it has been suggested that, given the emperor's feeling toward the other members of the family, Caligula adapted his behavior depending on the situation to avoid invoking the anger of Tiberius. Evidently, Caligula succeeded in his attempt to keep him on side, and although he cannot be said to have won Tiberius's affection, neither did he do anything to provoke suspicion. In the same year as the deaths of his brother and mother, Caligula held his first public office as quaestor, when he was still below the required minimum age, and was granted the concession to hold offices 5 years before meeting the age requirements, and although suggested for the position of augur, was instead promoted to the higher priestly college of the pontiffs. Later that year, Tiberius arranged his marriage to Junia Claudilla at Antium, but the marriage didn't last as she died in childbirth the following year. Following the death of his first wife, Caligula possibly became involved in an affair with Ennia, the wife of the prefect Macro. The primary accounts differ in their explanations of how the affair began, but each paints a picture of the character of Caligula that is typically known today. However, once again, some modern re-examinations of the evidence suggest that, while both Macro and Ennia were initially favored by Caligula and played their part in helping to secure his future succession, it is unlikely that an actual affair took place. By 35 AD, the succession had not been settled by Tiberius, who was by now in his mid-70s. It was in this year that he composed his will, but did not definitively set out who was to succeed him. Instead, it seems the matter was left open as he equally divided the imperial assets between his grandson, Gemellus, and Caligula. Many historians have suggested that this signaled Tiberius's wish that they become the joint heirs, but as neither contender was officially designated as the next emperor, it is likely that Tiberius was somewhat conflicted with the choice, and Tacitus's account that the emperor could not summon the strength to make a decision is most plausible. It has also been suggested that Tiberius feared for the safety of Gemellus at the hands of Caligula which may have hindered him in making a final decision. It was in 36 AD that Caligula came into contact with Julius Agrippa, sometimes known as Herod Agrippa, grandson of Herod the Great, who received permission to visit Capreae from Tiberius. Agrippa was supposed to have become a companion for Gemellus, but instead sought favor with Caligula. He flattered Caligula, extolling that he would make a better emperor than Tiberius, and when his words were later reported to Tiberius, he was arrested. Caligula, however, faced no repercussions. By the time Tiberius died in March 37 AD in Misenum, the question of the succession was still open. Once again, the primary accounts of Caligula differ, but all suggest that he played a role in the emperor's death alongside the Praetorian prefect Macro, although none of the claims can be substantiated. Whatever his involvement or lack thereof, the Praetorians took matters into their own hands and proclaimed Caligula Imperator on the same day that Tiberius died. And 2 days later, when the Senate declared their own allegiance to Caligula, they declared Tiberius's will null and void due to the unsound state of the deceased emperor's mind. Even before reaching the city, word was sent by Caligula that Julius Agrippa should be released from imprisonment into house arrest. Caligula accompanied the body back to Rome, arriving almost 2 weeks after the death, at the end of March, where he was greeted by joyous crowds. The Senate then officially conferred the power of the Principate to Caligula, which he accepted, only refusing the title of Pater Patriae, which he would accept later in the year. Caligula was now emperor at just 24, and while, as a son of Germanicus, he held the popularity of the people, unlike those who would otherwise have succeeded Tiberius, he had no preparation for the position in either governing or military command. Despite the Senate declaring Tiberius's will as null and void, one of Caligula's first acts as emperor saw him announce that he would honor the bequests of payment that Tiberius had made to the people and army. However, despite communicating with the Senate before his arrival in Rome, asking that Tiberius be deified, the motion was rejected, and Caligula didn't pursue it. He also pronounced an end to the Maiestas trials, that is, those trials dealing with claims against the Roman state, people or emperor, which had plagued the last years of Tiberius's reign, proclaiming that any exiled or imprisoned victims of the trials would be given their freedom, and all the documents pertaining to the trials would be publicly burned. He also promised to work with the Senate. By this point, Livia had been dead for 9 years, and only now were her bequests granted by the new emperor, having been refused by Tiberius. Caligula also added some of his own grants, which added to the wealth bestowed upon the Praetorians and people of Rome, and renewed the games which had been few and far between, and recalled the actors who'd been banished from Rome under Tiberius. Soon after, he delivered the oration at Tiberius's funeral, but said very little about the deceased emperor. However, early on, he still had to deal with the Parthians, who had been causing trouble in the east in the last years of Tiberius's reign. The Parthians had been stopped in their advance by the Syrian governor, Vitellius, who had been instructed by Tiberius to make peace with them, while still keeping a pro-Roman ruler on the throne of Armenia, which had always been a source of contention for the Parthians. The candidate for ruler under Tiberius, Mithridates, was recalled by Caligula to Rome and imprisoned, and by not installing his own ruler, made a concession to peace with the Parthians, although it went against the Augustan policy. Caligula also set out to honor his family members and traveled to the islands where his mother and eldest brother had died. He gathered their remains with his own hands and returned them to Rome via Ostia, where they were carried through the crowded city to Augustus's mausoleum and interred within, the procession taking on the style of a triumph. A raft of honors followed for members of his family. September was renamed after Germanicus. Coins were minted to honor his brothers Nero and Drusus, and statues of them were displayed in the city. He also laid out a decree that an image of his mother, Agrippina, would accompany future processions and funeral sacrifices, and that games in her honor would take place each year. He then turned to the remaining living members of the family. Antonia was granted the title of Augusta, the same title Livia had borne during her life. His three sisters were made honorary Vestal Virgins, although without the requirement of chastity. They were also to be included in the oath of allegiance sworn to the emperor and were to be allowed to sit in the emperor's box during games at the circus. To his uncle Claudius, he allowed him to take his first steps into political life, which Tiberius had refused. When he was designated to serve as Caligula's colleague as consul, he then adopted Gemellus, allowing him to assume the toga virilis, and granted him the title of Princeps Inventutus, effectively making him Caligula's heir. But he went further still, forbidding all honors for himself, including the displaying of statues in his image within the city. It was around this time that Julius Agrippa was formally released by Caligula and was rewarded by being granted part of his grandfather Herod's territory, comprising Trachonitis, Gaulonitis, and Batania, that had been under the purview of the governor of Syria since the death of the tetrarch Philip a few years earlier. Agrippa was named as king, and the funds that had been kept aside from the territories under Tiberius were granted to him. There is some suggestion that he may also have received the territory of Abilene at this time. Another friend of the emperor, Antiochus, had his father's territory of Commagene returned to him, which had been brought into the empire as a province by Tiberius. Caligula took up his first consulship on the 1st of July 37 AD, thereby allowing the previous consuls to serve their full term. When he assumed the office, he gave a speech in the Senate criticizing and denouncing Tiberius's actions. He also made changes to the way he would be formally greeted in public, dispensing with the customary greeting. The consulship lasted just a couple of months, but during this time Caligula dedicated the Temple of Augustus, of which construction had begun during Tiberius's reign. To celebrate the dedication, a great banquet and lavish games were held. Approximately 800 animals were killed in the arena for the entertainment of the people. There were also chariot races, and Caligula himself appeared driving a triumphal chariot. Both he and Claudius held the consulship for only 2 months before resigning to allow those next designated for the position to take up the role for the remainder of the year. Despite lacking the experience and age of his predecessors, Caligula performed the role of emperor well in the early months, ingratiating himself with the wealthy and plebeian classes alike. However, his success cannot all be attributed to himself, for Macro and his former father-in-law Silanus seem to have been instrumental in guiding him, seeming to strengthen their own positions within his regime. But soon after resigning the consulship, disaster struck, and Caligula fell ill sometime around September or October 37 AD and came close to death. However, it is unknown what afflicted him. The people of Rome were said to be grieved by the news, and nightly gatherings around the Palatine were observed. Caligula had no children, but had adopted Gemellus, and so Macro and Silanus, in an attempt to avert a succession crisis, began to make moves to ensure that, should the emperor die, Gemellus would succeed him. But it seems that Caligula had other ideas. It has long been asserted that of his three sisters, it was Drusilla whom Caligula favored the most and had grown close to her second husband, Aemilius Lepidus. While still sick, he chose Drusilla to inherit, and while a woman couldn't succeed him, her husband could. Caligula recovered and immediately set out to remove Gemellus, who was accused of plotting against the emperor. Gemellus was forced to commit suicide, but not before being instructed on how to do it by the soldiers sent to see it done. Another incident that took place shortly after his recovery tells of his attitude towards would-be flatterers, when he ordered two men who had sworn oaths for his recovery to carry out their words. One had offered his own death in place of Caligula's. The other had sworn to fight as a gladiator if the emperor recovered. There is some disagreement, however, whether the two men actually died or were merely submitted to the humiliations of their intended ordeals. There is some dispute on the exact sequence, but shortly after Caligula recovered, Silanus fell from his favor. His right to vote in the Senate first was rescinded when Caligula changed the procedure, and there is some suggestion that Silanus, remaining in Rome while Caligula traveled to recover his family's remains, aroused his suspicions, thinking that Silanus wished to take over, should the emperor not return from the sea voyage. Whatever the true cause of his fall, Silanus took matters into his own hands and committed suicide. Then, early in 38 AD, Caligula moved against Macro, who was appointed as the prefect of Egypt and was replaced as Praetorian prefect by two men instead of one, of whom only Marcus Aracinus Clemens is named, as Augustus had done during his reign. But Macro never made it to Egypt, and it has been suggested by one historian that the appointment was merely a deception, similar to that Tiberius had engineered against Sejanus. Primary sources attest that charges were laid against Macro and his wife Ennia, and they both committed suicide. It was in the midst of these first deaths that Caligula remarried late in 37 AD to Livia Orestilla, who was already engaged at the time. But like his first marriage, it didn't last. When they divorced a short time later, Livia was banished from Rome sometime following the divorce, although the date is uncertain. For the moment, the business of ruling the empire continued as normal. The New Year oaths were sworn in 38 AD, but Tiberius's decrees were excluded and his ban on historical writings were rescinded by Caligula. He also took the step of publishing the empire's accounts, which had been suppressed during Tiberius's reign. He made changes within the justice system, adding a fifth panel of senatorial judges to hear cases, and reducing the number he would hear himself. Caligula also made reforms within the equestrian class, allowing new members to be admitted, including men from among the provinces, since reductions made during Tiberius's reign had put a stop to new entrants, and those deemed suitable could advance further still to hold a position in the Senate. But Caligula went further still, abolishing the sales tax across Italy that had been introduced by Augustus and continued under Tiberius, benefiting the lower classes. He also returned the election of magistrates to the people, which Tiberius had given over to the Senate as per Augustus's wishes. He held lavish games, going so far as to have the floor removed from the scepter and flooding it so naval battles could be staged. Given the popularity of his policies early on, the Senate granted him a number of honors, including giving the first day of his reign the title of Parilia, which had come to be associated with the founding of Rome. Tiberius died, leaving a particularly healthy imperial treasury, which Caligula made full use of during his tenure. Banquets in Rome were customary among the upper class, and were used as a method of displaying wealth and tastes, as well as affording appropriate status to the attendees amongst their peers via their positions on the banqueting couches. However, Caligula, who had no precedent from either Tiberius or Augustus on how formal imperial banquets should proceed, flouted the wealth of the empire, holding a string of opulent banquets where tradition was pushed aside in order to give his favorites, including his sisters, positions of honor around the table. It is said that at one of these banquets, he drank vinegar in which pearls had been dissolved, and that food would be served covered in gold leaf, in outrageous displays of wealth. In another affront to tradition, and despite the earlier warnings of Macro about etiquette, Caligula invited guests that many would deem unsuitable, such as the charioteer Eutychus, whom he gifted with 2 million sesterces. But despite his affront to tradition early in his rule, it was still deemed an honor to be invited to Caligula's banquets. But his spending didn't stop at banquets. Caligula himself was a great fan of gladiatorial games and theatrical performances. He frequented the Circus Maximus, spending much time with the team of the Green Faction, but would also spend time in the company of actors and mimes. One mime in particular, Mnesta, would later be called Caligula's lover, given the amount of time they spent in each other's company. Rules surrounding entertainment were relaxed, and under Caligula, men of the aristocracy of Rome acted in the performances, something that had been prohibited under his predecessors. The frequency of games and performances increased dramatically during his rule, whereas they had been hugely scaled back under Tiberius. It seems that Caligula, with his own love of the popular entertainments, indulged at every opportunity. He was even known to train and fight with gladiators. He also extended the Saturnalia festival to 5 days. However, as much of the entertainment was provided by elected praetors, it was the senatorial class who came under the burden of most of the expenses, rather than the emperor. As well as lavish entertainment, Caligula embarked on both public and private building projects, which had been much curtailed under Tiberius, although most would be unfinished by the time of his death. Of the public buildings he began were an amphitheatre, the Aqua Claudia, and Annio Novus aqueducts, and a harbour at Rhegium, as well as dedicating the Theatre of Pompey, which alongside the construction of the Temple of Augustus had been in the process of renovation under Tiberius. But he also wasn't afraid to build for his own pleasure either. On the Vatican Hill, he built his own stadium for chariot racing known as the Gaianum, and began extensive extensions to the palace on the Palatine. On the 10th of June 38 AD, Drusilla, Caligula's favourite sister, died unexpectedly. His grief was immense, and when she was granted a public funeral, he was unable to attend due to the depth of his grief, her eulogy instead being delivered by her husband Lepidus. Caligula left Rome, first making for his villa at Alba, before travelling to Campania and then to Sicily, all the while letting his hair and beard go uncut as a sign of his grief. A period of mourning for her was decreed and observed in Rome and other parts of the empire such as Egypt. Those that didn't observe the mourning period may have risked conviction. As well as receiving the same honours as Livia after death, whose own mourning period was not subject to suspension of business, she was deified by the Senate and a statue erected to her in the Temple of Venus. She was also to receive her own temple and college of priests. She was to be part of the oaths sworn by any woman and was to be known throughout the cities of the empire as Panthea or All Goddess. Caligula even bowed to the flattery of one who announced he had seen Drusilla ascend to the heavens and should be struck down if he was lying, to which Caligula rewarded him with a handsome sum. Elaborate two-day games were to be held for her each year on her birthday following her death. These honours, although many, were not extraordinary in themselves, only that they went to a woman who was of so little political consequence. In the months following Drusilla's death and his return to Rome, Caligula married for the third time, although the exact date is unknown. His wife, Lollia Paulina, was a woman of immense wealth through inheritance, who at one of the more modest banquets supposedly wore jewels worth 40 million sesterces. When Caligula first sought her as a bride, she was already married to the governor of Moesia, Macedonia, and Achaia, Publius Memmius Regulus. A man of more modest means, he agreed to divorce his wife and supposedly gave her in marriage to Caligula himself. Towards the end of 38 AD, Caligula granted further territories, this time to the Thracian princes, Rhoemetalsis, Polemon II, and Cotys, whom he had known since his time in Antonia's household. They were granted Thrace, Pontus, and Lesser Armenia respectively, which had been under Roman governance since the death of their father Cotys, king of Thrace, in 19 AD. It was around the same time that the governor of Egypt, Aulus Aurelius Flaccus, was recalled and arrested, although the exact charges are unknown. Throughout the year, there had been unrest in Alexandria between the Greeks and Jews, but tensions diffused somewhat with the removal of the governor. Flaccus was condemned to exile and had his property confiscated. Lepidus, however, intervened and ensured a more comfortable exile than had been intended. Caligula began his second consulship on the 1st of January 39 AD, colleagued by Lucius Apronius Caesianus. And while Apronius completed the six-month term, Caligula resigned the position after only 30 days, whereby he was replaced by Sanquinius Maximus. But it was in 39 AD that things started to change. Although the sources are vague, for the months following Caligula's resignation from the consulship, a conspiracy involving former consuls against the emperor was discovered. The cases went through the courts, and the conspirators condemned under Maestas. Although we are not provided with their name, a number of others were then tried for corruption for the misuse of funds relating to road repairs stretching back into Tiberius's reign. Five other trials of senators are recorded for the time, including that of Seneca, of which three resulted in death or suicide. Only Seneca and the orator Domitius Afer escaped condemnation. However, the wholesale slaughter of the senators by Caligula at this time has been dismissed for lack of evidence in modern interpretations of the available sources. Caligula wasn't finished with the matter, though, and addressed the Senate where he denounced their treatment of Tiberius and placed the blame on them rather than the former emperor for the many deaths that had accompanied the Maestas trials in the last years of his reign. Information on the individuals that had fallen victim to the trials were recounted, and here Caligula revealed his hand, as much of what was spoken came from the documents that were supposed to have been burned. But he went on, rebuking the Senate for their hypocrisy in the way in which they spoke to him, presenting him with honors and then conspiring behind his back. At the end of his speech, he reinstated the Maestas trials and left the Senate, having made his position as ruler clear. The following day, the Senate responded in the only way they could, praising him as a pious, sincere ruler, voting that annual sacrifices should be offered in lieu of his clemency on the anniversary of his speech, and granting him an ovation, practicing the same flattery Caligula had criticized them for, and so it would continue for a time. Caligula now began to exploit the tradition of friendship that existed between members of the aristocracy. The Senate were under no illusion. His speech had made it clear what the emperor thought of them, but Caligula held the power and, for the moment at least, they had no choice but to comply. A resolution was passed through the Senate whereby all those that had named Tiberius in their will must now change it to name Caligula instead. But this wasn't all. Caligula gave large sums as gifts to force the recipients to make even larger gifts to him, which in some cases forced people into debt. Furthermore, when Caligula put his own gladiators up for auction, his presence at the event caused their prices to rise as those present felt obliged to bid. He is even said to have caused Aponius Saturninus to bid 9 million sesterces for 13 gladiators when Caligula drew the auctioneer's attention to the man nodding in his sleep, which was taken to mean he was bidding. One of the most notorious acts which Caligula is known for is wanting to make his horse a consul, and both ancient and modern historians have used this example to highlight his supposed insanity. But there is another explanation. Following the discovery of the conspiracy, Caligula had not been shy in expressing his feelings towards the members of the Senate, and thus far had employed fiscal humiliation tactics. He is said to have invited his favorite racehorse, Incitatus, to banquets where he would eat food made of gold, and was served with golden dinner services. But Caligula was also supposed to have had a fine marble stall constructed for him, a manger of ivory to hold his food, and purple blankets before being given a palace, staff and a dinner service so that he could entertain guests in the proper way. By presenting Incitatus with the accoutrements of aristocracy and stating his intentions to make him a consul, Caligula was making a joke at their expense, but also showing that power laid with him, and ultimately he would appoint who he liked to be consul. At the same time, although the date is uncertain, Caligula ended his third marriage, divorcing his wife Lollia. At the time, he stated the reason that she was barren. However, keeping with their negative narrative, the sources state that this was just an excuse, and he was, in fact, tired of her. However, later accounts from Claudius's reign give credence to Lollia's infertility. A short time later, during the summer of 39 AD, a child named Julia Drusilla was born to Milonia Caesonia, a woman of proven fertility who already had three daughters. Caligula married Milonia following the birth, possibly on the same day, although once again the timeline is uncertain. Milonia was already pregnant by the time Caligula divorced Lollia, and while there isn't any question that Caligula was the father, he reportedly carried the child to the Capitoline Temple and placed her on the statue of Jupiter, confirming her paternity, and then on that of Minerva, giving her education over to the goddess. But Caligula also used the opportunity of Julia's birth when he discussed the expenses of being a father, which forced members of the aristocracy to offer monetary gifts or risk a public demonstration of their lack of friendship to the emperor. Throughout the first half of the year, planning was underway for a campaign in Germany, including the raising of two new legions. But at the same time, another plot against Caligula was being developed. Among the conspirators were Lepidus, and both of the emperor's sisters, having been all but excluded from the succession with the birth of Caligula's child. The commander of Upper Germany, Guy Tullicus, who had held his position since 29 AD, as well as the Suffolk consuls, were also involved, and it is said that the plot was known of by many within the Senate. The plot was betrayed, although it is unknown by whom. But not all of the conspirators were immediately unmasked. Caligula moved first against the consuls, removing them from office and having their fasces, or rods of office, broken. This led to one of the unnamed consuls committing suicide, and Domitius Afer and Aulus Didius Gallus being appointed by Caligula to replace the disgraced consuls. It is likely around this time that Caligula also took the decision to divide the province of Africa in two and remove the last legion stationed there from the control of the Senate, command passing from the senatorial position of proconsul to the control of an imperial legate, thus restricting senatorial military commands. He then travelled to Umbria, but stayed only a short while, and going against the planning for the campaign, started, without warning, the journey to Germany at an unrelenting pace, his sisters and Lepidus among the retinue. Although the sources are somewhat unreliable, recent attempts have been made to produce a coherent account of the events surrounding the conspiracy and campaign. It has been suggested that Caligula, suspecting Guy Tullicus, left Umbria without warning in order to surprise the commander, thereby giving him no time to prepare to stand against him. Guy Tullicus was executed and replaced by General Galba. At the same time, his sisters and Lepidus's complicity came to light. Lepidus was executed and both sisters exiled, while he paid the soldiers for their loyalty and supposedly sent the swords that were to have been used against him back to Rome to be offered in the temple of Mars Ultor. He informed the Senate by letter of the plot and forbade the granting of any future honours to his relatives. A number of trials also took place for members of the Senate who had links to the conspirators involved in the plot, and others, such as the future Emperor Vespasian, were forced to denounce the actions of those involved. As with the first conspiracy earlier that year, the Senate granted an ovation for Caligula, but this backfired on them when they chose Claudius to lead the delegation that set out to deliver the news, as their choice went directly against Caligula's prohibition of honours for his family. Most of the delegation were dismissed back to Rome before reaching the emperor, and only a few, including Claudius, were allowed to attend him, although not without hostility on Caligula's part. Following this mistake by the Senate, Caligula then forbade them to grant any future honours to him. Under Guy Tullicus, the army had become lax and had failed to halt German incursions into Gaul. Now it fell to Caligula to correct things. He reduced the amount paid on completion of service and discharged many centurions due to their age and poor physical condition. Dishonorable discharges went to a number of commanders who, when redeployed to Germany, were thought to have delayed matters, waiting on the outcome of the conspiracy. Galba was rewarded for his loyalty with a commendation and the task of restoring the army of the Upper Rhine to an effective force. Similarly, the commander of the Lower Rhine army, Apronius, was replaced by Publius Gabinius Secundus due to his familial connections with Guy Tullicus and a record of defeats. Given the lateness of the season, little in the way of actual military campaign took place at the end of 39 AD. However, those small engagements that did take place resulted in victory for the Roman army. Galba was successful in pushing back the enemy, and Vespasian put a proposal to the Senate to hold games celebrating Caligula's victory in Germany. Caligula wintered in Lyon, where it appears he took account of the tax rolls. Dio suggests that to pay for the campaign, he ordered that the richer inhabitants of Gaul be executed and their wealth confiscated. However, this scenario is likely another attempt of an ancient historian to distort the interpretation of the situation to suit his own bias against Caligula, as it is known that, at this time, Caligula auctioned off the entirety of his sister's households. He then went further, ordering that many of the valuable possessions accumulated under Augustus and Tiberius throughout the imperial household should also be auctioned in Gaul, serving to raise Caligula's profile by allowing those in Gaul to acquire objects connected with the prestige of Rome. The town of Lyon gained from the emperor's visit, as it benefited from games and theatrical performances put on at Caligula's expense. While Lyon enjoyed the festivities provided by the emperor, the inhabitants of the nearby town of Vienna, modern-day Vienne, France, were granted Roman citizenship. At the beginning of 40 AD, Caligula took up his third consulship, but given his absence from Rome, the Senate, fearing recriminations of acting on his behalf, delayed all business until they heard from him. On the 12th of January, they received word from the emperor that he was resigning the consulship. Business commenced with sacrifices to Caligula in the temple on the Capitol and prostrations before the empty throne. Then, in the Curia, the senators offered praise and prayers for the young emperor. Shortly after the new consuls had taken up their positions, another letter arrived from Caligula, which led to the dedication and erection of statues for both the emperor and Drusilla. The events early in 40 AD are still subject to much debate, as no definitive answers can be gleaned from the sources. Rather than setting out to conquer further Germanic territory, the campaign on the Rhine continued in a defensive capacity following Caligula's reorganization within the ranks under the leadership of Galba. Caligula then set out, supposedly with his sights set on an invasion of Britain. However, we cannot state with certainty that he intended to invade Britain at this time, given that the Rhine frontier, although in a better position than it had been under Gaetulicus, was not yet secure. It has been suggested, on the one hand, that Caligula set out on a military procession from the Rhine towards the Channel, where, on arrival, he officially received the exiled Adminius from Britain and accepted his surrender. The order to collect seashells was given as part of the victory celebrations, and they were taken back to Rome and displayed as part of his triumph, and a donative paid to the soldiers. On the other hand, there is a suggestion that the legions mutinied on the shore, refusing to make the crossing to Britain, and they were then ordered to collect shells as a humiliating punishment. Given the lack of details and biased nature of the sources, these suggestions are the more plausible among the many proffered, but neither can be proved with certainty. Caligula then turned back for Rome and was met partway by a delegation from the Senate who urged him to hurry back to the capital, perhaps in no small part caused by the foiled conspiracy. His feelings towards the Senate had not improved, and he is purported to have uttered the words to the effect that he was coming back, and so was this, tapping the hilt of his sword. Going further still, he forbade the Senate from coming out to meet him on his return to the city. Around this point, there was also a change in those he surrounded himself with. Now, only in public would he still be accompanied by members of the Senate and aristocracy as a whole. His wife and both Praetorian prefects were among his confidants, but he now chose freedmen such as Callistus and Protogenes, and the slave Helicon over senators as part of his inner circle, further severing relations with them. On the way to Rome, it is likely that Caligula met with the client king Ptolemy of Mauritania, having been summoned by the emperor while he was absent. Ptolemy was arrested and imprisoned in Rome for a time before being executed. A number of reasons have been put forward for the execution. One is that Caligula took offense at the purple robes he wore. Another is that Caligula wanted Ptolemy's wealth. Or perhaps Ptolemy had in some way been involved in the plot against the emperor through a familial association with Gaetulicus. However, as with so much of Caligula's reign, no one reason can be stated with any certainty, if any are true at all. While it seems that Ptolemy had not been hugely favored amongst his people, his execution did spark a revolt by his loyal elements, which was not fully put down until 42 AD under Claudius. Caligula didn't enter the city immediately on his return. It may have been at this time in the gardens of Agrippina where he met with the Jewish delegation led by Philo from Alexandria for the first time, following the riots between them and the Alexandrian Greeks, although the timeline cannot be irrefutably confirmed, partly out of concerns for his own safety amid a crowd, and because he had forbidden honors from the Senate, precluding a triumph. He turned from Rome and made his way south to his villa near Puteoli, modern-day Pozzuoli, where he planned to stage his triumphant return by crossing the sea. Cargo ships were gathered from far and wide and set up in a double row across the three-mile span of the Gulf of Baiae from Puteoli to Bauli, and were piled with earth to form a solid crossing. Caligula, supposedly wearing the breastplate of Alexander the Great, made sacrifices to the gods and crossed the bridge from Bauli accompanied by his troops. The following day, he made the return crossing, this time bringing a train of plundered items with him, presumably from the north, as well as his friends of the aristocracy, troops and praetorians, and supposedly they dined on a stage at the center of the bridge. The celebration ended with many being thrown into the water, while the bridge itself was attacked by ship-borne rams, with much of it being sunk. Some of those that went into the water drowned, but others managed to pull themselves to safety. There is uncertainty surrounding the exact date of the event. Many historians place it in accordance with Dio's account of 39 AD, before Caligula journeyed to the Rhine frontier, but others, based on the accounts of Josephus and Seneca, place it a year later, following Caligula's return from the north. Caligula finally returned to Rome on the 31st of August 40 AD, his 28th birthday, and received an ovation. A number of trials were instigated, some of which fell under Maestas. Julius Canus, a Stoic philosopher, was sentenced to death, likely by the Senate, for a possible connection to a conspiracy. Although for some, such as the orator Julius Graecinus, reasons for trial and subsequent execution cannot be determined, and few actual cases are named, despite the assertion of the sources that Caligula was planning to eliminate much of the Senate, and the senators themselves once again began denouncing one another. But not all of the trials resulted in executions. When the senator Pomponius was accused by another, possibly of Maestas, his accuser called the freedwoman Quintilia as a witness. Despite being tortured by the Praetorian tribune Cassius Caria, she refused to reveal any information, damning or exonerating alike. When brought before Caligula following her ordeal, he was touched by the lasting disfigurement inflicted upon her and released both Quintilia and Pomponius, rewarding the freed woman with 800,000 sesterces. As denunciations continued in a bid to prove loyalty to the emperor, a third conspiracy came into being involving members of the aristocracy, the son of a former consul, Sextus Papinius, Vitellianus Bassus, an imperial quaestor, and a third unnamed senator were seized and executed after their plot was betrayed by the senator Anicius Cerealis, who would meet his own end under the emperor Nero. Caligula then exploited the feeling in the Senate following the discovery of the latest plot and, in the next session, granted impunity to the remaining members, as there were few now that he was still ill-disposed towards. But as likely intended, his words caused further fear among the senators, for Caligula hadn't named those who still attracted his ire. This led to bloodshed in a later session. Caligula didn't attend the session, but Protogenes, the man tasked with keeping records on the senators, did. When the senator Scribonius Proculus greeted him, Protogenes is reported to have replied with sharp words about the man's hatred for the emperor, which provoked a response from the other senators. They set upon Proculus, and he was reportedly torn apart, and his remains presented to Caligula, for which he was reported to have shown pleasure. Following the death of Proculus, Caligula declared his reconciliation with the senators, who in turn voted festivals in his favor, and issued a decree that he should sit on a high platform, kept away from those who would approach him, and would be allowed a military guard within the Senate. Now Caligula turned to a tactic of Sejanus, however, and permitted slaves to bring charges against their masters. So not only did the leading men of Rome have to guard their tongue in public, lest they be denounced, but now even their homes weren't safe from scrutiny. As a consequence, Claudius soon found himself denounced by one of his slaves and faced a trial. Although it is reported by Josephus that Caligula hoped for his uncle's execution, a statement which cannot be proven either way, the trial was dismissed without influence from the emperor. One of the more notorious stories of Caligula is his opening of a brothel on the Palatine, although we are not presented with a date for this apparent act. However, it has now been suggested that this was yet another way in which Caligula checked the behavior of the senators, and far from being a brothel, was actually an extension of familiares, the custom whereby favored members of the aristocracy lived within the palace. This instance, those women and children who were supposed to have been the prostitutes have been suggested to be the wives and children of those highest-ranking consulars who were in a way hostage to the emperor, their husbands and fathers thus compelled to repay the emperor with gifts for the honor bestowed on the family and avowing to the supposed friendship between them. Other, more overt attacks on the Senate now commenced, from which no one was immune. Caligula abolished the reserved seating for Senate and equestrians alike at theatrical performances, leading to competition for seats, which could become violent and force them to mix with plebs in the audience, demeaning their status. Claudius again was met with hostility when his vote in the Senate was demoted within the ranks, so that he would be the last to vote in all matters, not dissimilar to the treatment of Silanus years earlier. But going further, Caligula targeted those old Republican families and decreed that their statues should be taken down from the Campus Martius, and only he could decide whose statues and portraits were displayed. Those descendants of famous Republicans were also now denied the honors attached to their family, including that of a great-grandson of Pompey who was forbidden from using the title of the Great within his name. The humiliation continued further still. Caligula took to offering his hand or foot to be kissed by members of the Senate and failed to return the gesture, disdaining the symbolism of equality between them. Many times, he would make the gesture to those of lower standing, snubbing the well-respected and higher members completely. And yet those that did receive public favor in this way still continued to offer their thanks openly. Sometime in mid to late 40 AD, following further unrest in the east, this time in Judea, Caligula announced that the imperial cult and a statue of himself should be set up in the Temple of Jerusalem, a move which has often been cited as evidence for his thinking that he was a god. This act, in fact, was more likely in response to the destruction of an imperial altar at Jamnia by the Jews during the unrest. There is no evidence that Caligula actually considered himself a god. Since Augustus's time, the Senate had often referred to the emperors as divine as part of their praising of deeds, and both Augustus and Tiberius frequently refused such honors heaped upon them. The same is true of the earlier part of Caligula's reign. It is only following the conspiracies when his attitude towards the Senate changed that Caligula permitted this type of veneration to himself, and it has been suggested that it was yet another tactic he employed to humiliate the senators in demonstrating their submissiveness, rather than an official cult of worship. The imperial cult in the provinces was an important reflection of provincial loyalty to Rome, rather than a cult dedicated to the worship of the current emperor. Although divine ruler cults existed elsewhere and had been prominent in the Hellenic regions, again there is no suggestion that Caligula styled himself in this way, and while he was known to have dressed as a number of gods and goddesses occasionally in public, this should not be seen as his wish to be worshipped, but instead as his attempt to publicly expose the hypocrisy of the Senate by their veneration of him while styled as a god. By January of 41 AD, Caligula had finalized plans for an extended visit to Alexandria. There is also a suggestion that he may have been planning to eventually move the capital to the city. Since the discovery of the third conspiracy, Caligula's distrust among those in his inner circle had grown. Indeed, Bassus's father Capito had denounced those aristocrats whom he still had associations with and his own aides as part of the conspiracy before he was executed. The denunciations were dismissed, but the seeds of suspicion had been sown in Caligula, and despite the protestations of his freedman Callistus and the Praetorian prefects that they were loyal, Caligula was not convinced, and this placed them in danger. Callistus and the prefects couldn't be the ones to assassinate Caligula themselves, but as fear of possible future reprisals spread through the upper echelons of the Praetorians, Cassius Caria, a Praetorian tribune who had more contact with the emperor than most, having been given the distasteful tasks of tax collection and torture and frequently made the butt of the emperor's jokes, is suggested to have proposed Caligula's assassination. The plot then fell into place. Caria seemed eager to see it done and brought another tribune, Cornelius Sabinus, on side. However, he was repeatedly put off from acting by the prefect Clemens. But finally, the date was set for the 24th of January. Caligula's departure for Alexandria was scheduled for the 25th. Caligula spent the morning in the theater, opening the performance with a sacrifice to Augustus before returning to the palace later in the day. Separated from his entourage that had accompanied him from the theater, Caligula was now flanked by the two tribunes. There are several differing accounts of the murder, but most agree that it was Chaerea who struck the first blow before the emperor was set upon by Sabinus and a number of centurions. Caligula's death was immediately followed by that of his wife and child at the hands of a tribune by the name of Lupus. In the immediate aftermath of his death, a number of conspirators were killed by members of the imperial Germanic bodyguard within the palace, while a search was instigated for others. The spectators in the theatre were horrified at the news of the attack on the emperor, and rumours were rife, some stating that the emperor wasn't dead at all. Only a short while later was it confirmed by Arruntius Euaristus that Caligula was indeed dead, which quelled the Germanic bodyguard who'd surrounded the theatre, allowing the spectators to leave. Arguments ensued over the future of the empire amongst the Senate, some going as far as to seek the restoration of the Republic, but the following day the decision was taken out of their hands when the Praetorian prefects declared Claudius as emperor, and soon the Senate followed suit, confirming him in his position. With the exception of Sabinus, who committed suicide, all the remaining assassins were then executed. Caligula has been seen for many years as a mad and lustful emperor, but increasingly, modern historians have re-evaluated the available primary sources and now suggest that many of the accounts were hostile towards him, painting a picture of an insane, tyrannical monster, unfit to rule in their eyes, muddling his deeds, and projecting bad qualities of later emperors onto him to suit their purpose, rather than giving a true recounting of his short rule, thereby biasing our own narratives of him. A prime example of this can be seen during Caligula's time in Germany. Suetonius's accounts of the later emperors Galba and Vespasian point to small victories in Germany during the closing stages of 39 AD, but his writings on Caligula, which completely fail to mention the foiled conspiracy, distort his actions in the region, painting a farcical picture of his time there, rather than that of an emperor attempting to right a situation that had developed over the last decade. Similarly, it has been well stated that, having been left a healthy treasury by Tiberius, Caligula bankrupted the empire. However, in-depth modern examinations of fiscal activities during his reign suggest that he in fact promoted sound economic policy and left the treasury in good condition despite his lavish spending. As well as this, for many years, the narrative of Caligula's incest with his three sisters has been propagated and is still thought of as true by a minority of historians today. But it is only in some of the later accounts, such as Suetonius, rather than those of his contemporaries, that this accusation is made. Similarly, in an account of his sister Agrippina by Tacitus, while he posits that she may have attempted incest with Nero, nothing is mentioned of Caligula. And so it is clear that these accusations should be seen as slander rather than truth. Caligula's reign began on a good note. He was welcomed as the young emperor to succeed the reviled Tiberius, popular with the people and Senate alike, and seemed to usher in a new era of cooperation and friendship. Caligula in some way sought to emulate Augustus in the beginning, painting himself as an equal to the Senate and promising to work with them. His early policies benefited the populace, and he instigated a program of public building that would benefit Rome in years to come, that had not been seen under his predecessor. He also did much to assuage the fears of the aristocracy, banning the maiestas trials that had become prevalent for much of the last decade, and pardoning those still living that had fallen victim to them. Even following the deaths of Gemellus, Silanus, and Macro, he was seen as justified in his actions, and remained popular with much of the populace and army until his death. Perhaps in part because of his own interests, he repealed a number of Tiberius's acts against entertainment and literature, which were well received by all, including the senators for a time. But change came following the discovery of the first conspiracy, and Caligula's attitude towards the Senate and aristocracy as a whole soured, becoming more hostile as time progressed, and more inclined to rule without their input. His attacks were subtle at first, before becoming more overt, resulting in public humiliations of many within the aristocracy, and through their resentment the conspiracies continued to unfold, only further worsening the relationships between them. Caligula supposedly viewed the discomfort of those he targeted with a perverse humor, feeling that they had brought everything on themselves and was unconcerned that his activities caused financial or physical harm. He took his actions to the extreme in exposing the hypocritical and submissive nature of the Senate and, at the same time, chipping away at their power, which is made worse by the fact that they were the actions not of a madman, as many would have us believe, but of a sane and calculating individual who ultimately sought to rule without the body that had held power in Rome for centuries. What do you think of Emperor Caligula? Has he been rightly characterized by ancient and modern historians alike as an incompetent ruler and an insane tyrant who lusted for the blood of those beneath him? Or is his reputation undeserved? Please let us know in the comment section. And in the meantime,
did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.